the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Could Donald Trump's efforts to come to some sort of deal with Iran to bail him out of his war come to naught because of Israel's actions in Lebanon? We're joined by Marion McKeown. And first, Cal Thomas, reports today suggesting that Trump has had to force Benjamin Netanyahu not to push into Beirut and further into southern Lebanon. Could it be that the relationship between Trump and Netanyahu is going to break down because Netanyahu won't do what Trump wants him to do?
Yeah, well, Israel's a sovereign nation, Matt. Look, I've been to Beirut. I've been to southern Lebanon in the late 70s, where I discovered the PLO had stored missiles and bombs in schools and hospitals. These are terrorists who have as their charter and as they believe their religious duty to wipe Israel off the map, to kill as many Jews as possible. They haven't changed at all in that objective. And I don't think Trump has any strong convictions on this. All he is interested in is making a deal so he can claim that he has brought another peace settlement, this time to the Middle East. You'll recall all the bragging he's done about various wars in the Congo and Azerbaijan and other places. He would love to get this one and win the Nobel Peace Prize for himself. I think that's his ultimate objective.
Cal, do you believe that Israel is justified in pushing into southern Lebanon and taking land there like it has taken previous occupied territories, and that it is somehow entitled to bomb Beirut?
Well, in 1979, I went up into southern Lebanon with some members of the Israeli army and discovered some of those things I just told you about. When Hezbollah invades Lebanon and holds territory that they use to attack civilians in northern Lebanon, it would be like Canada or Mexico attacking northern or southern cities in the United States. You can either let it happen or you can weed out the terrorists, and that's what Israel's trying to do.
Okay, Marion McKeown, what do you say to all of that?
Well, I think, first of all, Cal, what you're referencing happened almost, 47 years ago or thereabouts. So I don't think, I was actually in Tehran in southern Lebanon less than a decade ago. And to see what Trump or what Netanyahu is bombing, these UNESCO sacred sites, some of the oldest Phoenician sites in the world, these magnificent ruins, it's just wanton destruction and probably war crimes. There is no justification for this. The government of Lebanon was trying to get Hezbollah to a point. I mean, it may have been futile, it may be a long-term project, but to a point where they would reasonably participate peacefully in the Lebanese government, which, as you know, is extremely fragile. And this has completely thwarted that attempt, and probably deliberately so. I think the readout of Trump's call, which is quite extraordinary, in which he tells Netanyahu, allegedly, if we can believe it, that everyone hates him and now everybody hates Israel and that he kept him out of prison, etc., etc. It does sound like something Trump, a rant Trump might go on, but it also shows the frustration that Trump, having started this war of choice and being bounced into it, if you believe the initial versions from Rubio and various other people, and now cannot find a way out of it. And it seems that every time he gets onto some kind of an off-ramp, it's blocked off by Netanyahu. So I can understand his frustration, but I don't think, Cal, that there are any peace prizes for ending a war of choice that you start. I don't think Trump's going to get too much credit for that, even if he does succeed in doing so. But I did see that he is talking to Hezbollah through intermediaries, and I do welcome that. I think you've got to talk to all sides if you're trying to bring about any kind of a ceasefire, any kind of a peace.
Yeah, he said that he'd had a very good call with Hezbollah through highly placed representatives. Has any American president, either directly or indirectly, ever dealt with Hezbollah previously? Marion?
Me or Mary?
My knowledge, and Cal may know more than me, but absolutely not to my knowledge. Yep. They are a proscribed terrorist organization. There is no diplomatic contact with them from any American source that I've ever known of.
Well, so Cal, what do you make of that, given what you've said about Hezbollah and your belief that Israel is entitled to go after Hezbollah? Well, what do you make of Trump saying he had a very good call with Hezbollah through highly placed representatives, that he would appear to be endorsing dealing with them?
Yeah, well, the official policy policy of the United States for years, Matt, has been we do not deal with terrorist organizations. Now, that's been violated secretly on numerous occasions. We've had presidents and their representatives talking to the Taliban. I think it was the Taliban to Camp David. They didn't come. So the official policy is not always the policy that is followed. But you're not going to get it. There's no moral equivalency between the United States, Hezbollah, and Israel. There just isn't. And especially when you have a religious mandate, or think you do, and we've talked about this before on the program, to kill the infidels, to eliminate Israel, you're not going to make any kind of agreement that's lasting when you're negotiating with people they consider as infidels. That would be us, and that would be Israel. That's just a fact.
What'd you say to that, Marion?
You know, Cal, honestly, I would have agreed with you not that long ago that there is no moral equivalence, but I don't think the same can be said today. I don't think, given what Israel has done, the war crimes that it has committed in Gaza, the destruction, the appalling acts of violence that it has sanctioned in the West Bank, in the settlements, and what is now happening in Lebanon, I think it has squandered any moral superiority that it once undeniably had. And I say that about Netanyahu, not about the state of Israel or the Israeli people or the Jewish people, which is a completely different thing, which is something that Netanyahu always tries to conflate to spread the blame for his misdeeds.
Also, Marion, is there a sense, though, as well, that Trump is trying to move on from Iran? Because he said peace talks with Iran are very boring and he couldn't care less if they were stalling. Are we reaching the stage with Trump where he might try to pretend that nothing's actually happening there?
Oh, I think Trump's been bored and fed up with this for weeks. He thought this was a 3-day war, that this was going to be like Venezuela, that America would be in and out and he'd have another notch on his belt. And it has worked out to be anything but. And Trump has no interest in the incremental losses and gains, the one step forward, one step back, you know, which characterizes all complex peace processes. He's got no interest in that. He has lost interest. I suspect he'd love to move on to Cuba now he probably thinks he could get a quick, sharp hit there and a victory there, although he may be mistaken again. But he has no interest in being involved in this Mardan, this for the long haul. But the problem is, it's very difficult to see how he gets out of it, especially when he's locked into this sort of two-step with Netanyahu.
Okay, let's move on to his settlement with the Department of Justice, which he controls and runs, over the issue of the release of his tax details, something which actually happened not during the Biden administration, but happened under his own first administration. Indeed, the person responsible for that was prosecuted and jailed during Joe Biden's time. Go figure. So anyway, Trump takes his legal action against the Department of Justice, seeking $10 billion in compensation. He settles for $1.778 billion in a so-called anti-weaponization fund. Before I go to Cal on this, let's hear a little bit of what former Vice President Mike Pence said when he was on NBC's Meet the Press at the weekend about this.
Well, look, I think that the weaponization fund is it's a bad idea from the start, and I would encourage the administration just to drop it. The Justice Department has the ability to settle cases like they did with that pro-life family who was put upon during the Biden administration, got us a well-deserved seven-figure settlement this week. But let's get rid of this fund. I mean, it's deeply offensive to me that you could have a fund that could even possibly compensate people who assaulted police officers or vandalized the Capitol on January 6th. And I think that's broadly held by most Republicans and most Americans.
So finally, has a line actually been drawn in the sand by which Republicans will not cross or will not allow to be swept away, that Trump will not get away with this, Cal?
Well, I think Pence is absolutely right. Look, I'm against the so-called anti-weaponization fund. And let's not forget that people that invaded the Capitol on January 6th, some of them were carrying signs and chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." He was definitely under physical threat. Others had invaded the office of Speaker Nancy Pelosi, one of them saying that he wanted to kidnap her. So this was an outrageous thing. The federal government should not be paying for lawyers on this. Pence is right. There is a process in the Department of Justice. If people feel they were wrongly convicted, wrongly accused, they they can go through that. But this would set a terrible precedent, no matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative.
But Marion, could it be that we've got another classic Trump bait and switch in that he drops this one, lets it go, everybody says, well, that's all right, so. And at the same time, another part of the settlement with the Department of Justice in relation to that of his tax affairs, his company's tax affairs and all his relatives, then gets by quietly while everyone is focused on this.
Well, I don't think that second part is going to get through at all, because I think that is the core violation, whatever about arguing that the Department of Justice has the right to pay out as it sees fit or whatever. You cannot, the second part of the deal cannot stand in law, because if to do so, you would be carving out a group of American people that to which due process does not apply, and you just can't do that. So that's never going to stand. That will inevitably be challenged in court. But my big other concern about this slush fund, the $1.77 billion, is that the terms of the fund don't require any disclosure at all about how much is paid or to whom it is paid. So in theory, you could have a $1.775 billion payout to Roger Stone or Steve Bannon or Alan Weisselberg, all Trump's big cronies and former people who were prosecuted and received prison sentences, for example, and they could then set up a PAC and, you know, and put the money, all the money into it, which could then be accessed by Trump. I mean, there are so many ways to work around this so that the money would end up back in Trump's back pocket. So I think that, I don't think Trump anticipated the blowback on this and the extent of the fury. And Cal, I think Mike Pence was very gracious not to point out that these are the people who carried a scaffold to Capitol Hill and were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." You know, he has good reason to feel aggrieved about this, but so do the police officers who were beaten to a pulp, who had to retire because of their injuries, who suffered severe trauma. The whole thing is completely disgusting. And I think for most Republicans, it was a bridge too far. And I think Trump sort of got the hint of that, but also the fact that the judge has now resurrected the legal sort of pursuit of this, and it has to be re-justified. I think that they're just not going to go the distance.
Now, a US judge has also ordered the removal of Trump's name from the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts, ruling that the iconic Washington venue cannot be renamed without an act of Congress. But Cal, will Trump take any notice of that? Do you think, will he really take his name down from the building?
Well, we'll see. I mean, there are legal procedures, of course, and I agree with the judge's ruling. This was an act of Congress to honor a martyred president. And Donald Trump has nothing to do with the Kennedy Center. He may have gone there a couple of times, but I've gone to various places many times, and I've never asked that my name be put on the building. Yes, he wants to renovate it, and that's fine. It needs some renovation. And yes, I would compliment him on some of the renovations he's done in the Washington, D.C., in the city. Fountains that have not operated in years, beautifying the reflecting pool. All of those things are positive. But I think this was a unique thing. It was the Kennedy Center. And there is, you know, he appointed a board of his own lackeys to approve this. But I think the judge is right. This was established by Congress, and only Congress can change it.
Sorry, Cal, have you not been following the stories in relation to the fountains and the reflecting pool at the Lincoln Memorial and the incredible costs involved and the various dubious methods by which the contracts were awarded? Do you think you're getting value for money there?
Well, there's no question that these things needed repair. They've gone without repair for a long time. They have been ugly. The city's been ugly. Look, I was born in Washington, and I've seen the city beautiful, and I've seen it ugly. It's ugly. It's been ugly up until recently, and we've got this 250th anniversary of our founding coming up on July the 4th. And I don't know where the money's going. Yeah, probably some of it has gone to some of his cronies. But he wouldn't be the first president to do that.
I think he might be the first president to do it on the scale of which this has actually been done. And when you talk about eyesores, are you happy with how the White House is looking these days, particularly with the octagon being set up for the mixed martial arts fighting to mark Trump's 80th birthday?
Well, I'm not a fan of mixed martial arts, and I don't think it belongs on the White House grounds. I've just written this column that'll be in my newspapers on Thursday about what a really, I think, an unhappy American birthday this is. I remember the bicentennial in 1976. Gerald Ford was our president, a modest and humble man. What a contrast. There was the Vietnam War had ended in April. There were flag wavings all over the country instead of flag burnings. And I just, there's an ugliness now sweeping this country that is very offensive to me. And I'm very sad about it. Maybe things will be better on the 300th anniversary. I'll let you know.
Marion, I see many of the musical acts that have been planned to celebrate the 250th anniversary have been cancelled because they can't get people to take part in it. So instead, you're going to have a Make America Great Again rally for the 250. Politicisation of the 250th anniversary. That's real tin pot dictator stuff, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's surprising at all. And I just want to refer back to what Cal was saying about, I think we should have a plaque for Cal on the doors of the JFN buildings. I think that he sounds like you want a plaque somewhere, Cal, I think, do you? But I do think that this whole thing is a farce now. It's just turned into, you know, it looks like the only people who are going to stay are prepared to play are Milli Vanilli, a rapper from the 80s, and they were a duo who never sang in the first place. They were lip syncers. And so this is a tribute band to a pair of lip syncers, and then Vanilla Ice, who's another has-been from the 80s. Everybody who could have got a booking somewhere else at any point in the future has now fled this because it's become so partisan and so unpleasant. I agree with Cal. I think it's really sad that America's 250th birthday is turning out to be such a partisan, bitter, unpleasant affair. I was there for, I think it was the 225th and the 240th indeed. And I remember George W. Bush, like Cal said about Gerald Ford, did a really modest, low-key affair and was all about civic duty. And they got all the kids to send birthday cards and birthday letters to America, huge school projects. And it was all about unity and being civic minded. And this is just brash and vulgar and tacky. And I think it is a pretty unhappy birthday. And I hope it's not really, I'm afraid it is a sign of where America is at the moment. Let's just hope that the next birthday is better.
Well, there's something else. Marion, what do we know of Jill Biden's book? The former president's wife has written her story. What's in it?
Well, you know, first of all, why? I mean, why did she bother? There's no demand that I can see for this book. I don't see that there's any need for it. The big headline out of it is that she apparently thought when Joe Biden was in that disastrous debate performance that he was having a stroke. That was her first thought, which, you know, is understandable. But if she did think that, they went straight to an after party afterwards and, you know, other events, debriefing events. There was no sign of anybody calling him a doctor or having him checked. So I find the fact that she's writing a book at this stage, I don't know what record she's trying to set straight. I think that ship has sailed. I think most Democrats now just want to forget the absolute disaster that was the final months of Biden's term in office, and which really obscured some really good things he did in the first 2 years and the absolute ridiculous mistake that he made in deciding to seek a second term. And even worse, that those around him, the advisors and the Democrats at large, that they didn't really pressure him much more at a much earlier stage not to run.
Well, just finally, Cal, Trump has been boasting about how easily he passed all his medical tests. But the Wall Street Journal is pointing out this lot of gaps in what has been released publicly, a lack of specificity. So what do you make of this? You know, how confident can we be that Trump is fit and able?
Well, presidents have covered up or lied about their medical conditions forever. I mean, you think of JFK, his problems, LBJ, Bill Clinton, possibly Ronald Reagan. There are a lot of people who think that he had early Alzheimer's in his second term. And as Marion mentioned, certainly Joe Biden. But I think full disclosure is always helpful. I had my annual physical yesterday. I just got the full metabolic panel, and I'm happy to share it with anybody, except I'm not running for president. I think that Trump should do the same thing, especially the cognitive business. He repeats himself a lot. He says a lot of things that are not true, verifiably. And I think with his 80th birthday coming up, in about 12 days, I think the public deserves to have a full disclosure on everything.
Cal Thomas, Marion McCone, thank you.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.